Starring Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
CX-4 calling control tower. CX-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower. Back to CX-4. Wind southeast. Ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay. This is Hop Harrigan coming in.
Yes, it's America's ace of the airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
Say, this sounds downright impossible. One building with a range of temperatures from 70 below to 165 above, and a humidity range of from a parched 7% to a dripping 100%. And that isn't all. Inside this one building, there can be a terrific tropical rainstorm one minute, producing 12 inches an hour, and the next instant, the rain will stop, and hot, dry air will dry up the moisture. Oh, come on, gang, you must have guessed it by now. Sure, it's the Army Air Force's new all-climate hangar, built in Florida, and capable of reproducing the climate of any spot on the face of the earth. In the rooms of this huge hangar, tons of equipment, whole planes and engines, guns and all kinds of parts, can be tested in all kinds of weather. The jungle room reproduces the exact heat and humidity of the tropics, and there's even a device that aids the formation of jungle mold on equipment so that Army experts can tell what happens when this jungle rot strikes. In the cold room, the polar climates can be recreated. In the hot room, the stifling dry heat of the desert is quickly cooled to the temperature of night on the desert as equipment is subjected to the wide range and sudden changes of desert temperatures. Well, there's even a wind machine and a provision for flooding a room so that life rafts and other floating equipment can be tested. And it's all designed to make the Army Air Forces bigger and better, as you'll hear when I come back in a few minutes. So don't forget to listen. And now to our story. Like puffs from a gigantic pipe, smoky gray patches of cloud float windblown in the sky over the sultry rolling swell of the Gulf of Mexico. Sometimes clearly seen, then completely hidden from view, as though it were playing a mischievous game of hide-and-seek with each cottony billow, a powerful Beechcraft biplane arrows eastward toward the northern coast of the peninsula of Yucatan. Hop, Tank, and young Christopher Cross are on the way to Merida, the jumping-off point in their search for an age-old secret which may revolutionize the entire concept of modern flight.
Hop, yeah? When do you think we'll hit land again?
Oh, not for another 2 hours at least. We've only flown about 100 miles.
Yeah, but we ain't exactly local.
There's still a good 400 miles to go.
We're holding a course east by southeast, aren't we?
We're more nearly east, Chris. What?
Oh, just checking my compass ring.
Oh, is it working okay?
Oh, you bet it is. Hasn't gone off once.
You're going to wear it out if you don't stop polishing it on your sleeve all the time.
Oh, I want it to look good. It does, doesn't it?
Sure, Chris. Looks swell. Say, Hop. Now, after we get to Merida, then what?
Well, we start looking.
For Pete's sake, where? Yucatan's a big place.
Well, according to what you said, Chris, you were about 120 miles from Merida when you left the Lost Mayan City.
Well, that's right. We flew about an hour.
Well, what does that tell us? 120 miles which way? North, south, east, or west?
Drag out the chart. Maybe we can pin it down somehow.
Okay.
I wish I could be more help.
You're doing fine, Chris.
I'll know it if I just see it again. There's a big temple in the middle of the city, like an Egyptian pyramid.
A which?
A pyramid. Haven't you ever seen one?
Oh, sure, sure. Pyramid. Didn't hear you right.
Say, what does a pyramid look like?
You know, like what Chris said, a big temple, real classy. Hey, here's the chart you wanted, Hop. Now, if we
What does it look like, say?
Huh? What's what look like?
A pyramid.
Oh, it's a big thing. What's the matter, don't you know? Ain't he the dumb bunny, Chris? Don't even know what a pyramid is.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Why, Chris, tell him. By the time he wised up to a couple of things around here. Go on, give him the lowdown.
Well, it's a type of monument.
So, Chris, I know what... Look, go on, Chris.
They were built as tombs for the Egyptian pharaohs.
There. Hear that? Egyptian pharaohs.
In a way, they were just triangular-shaped piles of stone, but they were awfully big.
You see? Now, Hop, you learned something.
Okay, thank you, Win.
All right. Since that's settled, is it okay if we get to the business, which is on hand? How are we going to find this here pyramid?
Oh, I didn't say the temple was a pyramid, Tank. It just looks like
Look,
one.
Now, don't get off the subject. I want to know how we're going to find what's 120 miles from Merida without taking all year.
Okay, okay, let's see.
Now, here's Yucatan. Sticks right out into the Gulf of Mexico, and there's Merida on the north coast.
That knocks out one direction right away.
Which?
Why, north, Tank. There's nothing but water up that way.
Okay. I'm only trying to get the facts lined up, that's all.
And west is out, too. Same reason.
Yeah. Which leaves south and east and everything in between.
Well, from the looks of the layout, it seems to me that if Professor Cross had been 120 miles south of Merida and was in a hurry to get back to Washington, he wouldn't have returned to Merida at all.
Why?
He would have cut west to this city here, Campeche. That's a good 70 miles closer than Merida and in a direct line with his course back to the States.
Well, that makes sense, all right.
Does, huh?
No, doesn't it?
Sure. I was agreeing with you, wasn't I? So that leaves this whole eastern corner of Yucatan.
And a little southeast, too. How's that stack up with you, Chris?
Well, there's a lot of Mayan ruins in that part of Yucatan, but I'm not sure if the place we want is there.
You don't have to be sure right now, Chris. We just want a general area to work on.
Well, I guess that would be your best bet, east and southeast of Merida.
Still a pretty big chunk of country.
Yeah, but a lot less than we figured on. Okay, roll up the map and put it away.
Roger.
Are we going to start looking for the ruins today, huh?
We'll see how the weather stacks up in Merida. We'll be in by noon, which gives us a good 5 or 6 hours of daylight. We can probably make a quick preliminary survey flight.
What about dinner?
You can have a sandwich while we refuel. And tonight we'll get a good night's rest and start out early in the morning.
Boy, I sure could use some sack time.
That shindig with La Pantera last night wasn't no dream.
Yeah, it was a nightmare.
Didn't get no sleep, no matter what you call it.
Huh? What do you think she'll do now?
Oh, your guess is as good as mine, Chris.
Well, maybe she's had enough. Maybe she'll quit.
You're forgetting that note she left in the plane, aren't you?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
She's far from quitting. She's more determined to get us now than ever.
Because we beat her a couple of times, huh?
That's part of it, perhaps. But she knows we're getting closer to the secret of the Mayan mural all the time. She's afraid we'll get there first.
Well, how can we miss?
Sure, I'm the only one who knows where it is.
Well, let's hope we don't lose our advantage.
Yeah, there's something else, too. As long as Chris is the only one who knows, she ain't going to touch him or her goose is cooked. She'd never get the secret.
I wouldn't be so sure, Tank. If all of us were put out of the way, she'd have a clear field and all the time in the world to find the mural herself.
Gosh, I never thought of that.
Don't start in. I bet La Pantera's still back in Tampico, chasing around like a chicken with its head cut off. By the time she finds out what the score is, we'll have the secret and be on our way north again. Nothing's going to stop us now.
Tank's confidence and optimistic claims temporarily dispel Hop's innate caution. And as he stares through the windshield at the cloud-flecked sky before him, he nods in agreement. However, not 5 miles away, roaring high above the broken cloud pattern, La Pantera's twin-engine Cessna follows a parallel course, taking care to stay in the Beechcraft's blind spot. The clever foreign agent watches the boy's plane narrowly. Finally, she turns to one of her men, seated beside her in the flight compartment, with a submachine gun resting on his knees.
Everything goes well, Francisco. I am sure Oregon and Chico do not know we are behind them.
Then we are soon ready?
Very soon. We are far over the water now, and there are no ships in sight. Should anything happen to their plane, should they crash here, no one will know the difference.
There will be no doubt of their crashing. Once you give me the order, senor.
Wait. Do not be impatient. I must make sure of everything.
Bueno, senora?
The clouds are gathering heavily. I am sure there is a fog not far ahead.
It will provide excellent cover for our escape.
That is what I am hoping. So, we will prepare. Check the machine gun. I will catch up to them.
There is no need to check. I have been ready since we left Tampico.
Check it, I say. There must be no slip-up.
Very well, senor. Loaded and ready, senora.
See? We are almost within diving range. Oh, the fools. They still do not see us.
They will never know what happened.
We are closing the distance rapidly. So, this is far enough. We can go no further without being seen by them.
So?
It is time. Open the window on your side.
Si, senora.
No, we shall dive down upon them. Be ready, Francisco, to send them down in day.
Her black gloved fingers curling around the throttles, La Pantera opens the engines of her plane wide and roars in a long, slanting dive down toward the tail of the unsuspecting beach craft. Her accomplice, Francisco, steadies himself, rests the muzzle of his machine gun on the open window frame, waiting for a sure kill. Gang, there's plenty of action ahead, so stand by. In the lessons our flyers learned during the war, none is more important than the fact that men and planes and equipment must function in all kinds of weather and in almost every climate. That was largely true in the last war, and if there should ever be the need for our military aircraft to fly in another war, then we can be sure that they must be able to operate in the tropics, in the frozen polar regions, and in the more pleasant temperatures that are in between. How does the military flyer know where his equipment will work properly? Well, gang, let me tell you, the Army Air Forces are really working to get all the answers, and you can bet your boots they'll succeed. They've built a new hangar at Eglin Field, Florida. It's called a climatic hangar, and that means that inside the hangar, there are big rooms in which the temperature and humidity of any region on Earth can be duplicated. Let's imagine that a new pursuit ship has just been delivered to the Army Air Forces. Well, sir, that whole plane or any of its parts can be tested. We might start in the hot room and shoot the heat up to 165 degrees. Does the motor overheat? Is the oil too heavy? How about the fluid in the hydraulic system? Does it boil away? Well, we get the answers to those questions. Then into the cold room with the new plane. Drop the mercury down to 70 below. Let's see if the motor will start. Do the controls still handle okay? How about the flaps and the landing gear? Reaction okay? All right, run her into the jungle room and the desert room. Give her jungle heat and 100% humidity. Watch for signs of fungus. And then desert heat, dry and parching. And so it goes, gang. We're making sure that our Army Air Forces can do the job anytime, anywhere. So, fellas and girls, when you learn to fly, you'll be flying the best aircraft in the world. And always remember, America needs flyers. And now, back to our story. Completely unaware that La Pantera's plane is hurtling down upon them at a tremendous rate of speed, Pop, Tank, and young Christopher Cross hold a steady course for Merida.
Clouds are thickening up. You know, it looks like we're going to run into some weather.
Storm?
No, I don't think so, but I can't see the horizon anymore. It's like fog.
Yeah, I can smell it. Hey, Chris.
Yes, Tank?
Hand me them glasses, will you? They're in back.
Oh, sure.
Never mind, I can reach
them. Hey, Tank, sit still. You knocked the controls right out of my hand.
Gosh, I'm sorry, Hop. Go for Johnny.
Wait, Scott.
What's the matter?
Didn't you hear?
That was a machine gun, kid.
A machine gun?
Look, off to the left, the twin-engine Cessna.
It's flapping terrorist plane.
Then you're trying to shoot us down. She did the same thing to my father.
Hop, watch it. She's coming in for another run. Pull up. Pull up.
I can't. We'll shed our wings.
She's got us right where she wants us. Hop, we're taking an awful pound.
There's nothing I can do. Look out.
Hop shouts a frantic warning, and Tank and Chris feel the dull, thudding impact of a stream of lead hitting the fuselage amidships. The beach craft suddenly flips over on its back and begins a wild, careening spin straight down to the water. Is this the end? How can the boys possibly escape certain death? We'll know what happens in the next action-packed episode, gang, so don't fail to listen. Tune in and fly with Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. So long, Hop. We'll be seeing you same time, same neutral station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazines.